So I told the barista, this is two honeys in here, not one. It is just not sweet enough.
Well, it probably made it awkward. She probably thought you were calling her honey, and that's the issue. Oh.
Hey, guys. Sorry I'm late. I'm really excited to be here to talk about Fate of the Furious.
Hey, Greg, it's not a problem because we will wait for family.
Oh, I've actually just met Greg. I don't know if I'd classify him as family.
On this podcast, Julie, we're all family.
I'm kind of with Julie here. I mean, Steve, you and I are definitely friends, but that's about it.
Can we just stop saying family and start talking about the movie?
Yeah, let's speed things up a little bit.
All right. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screen Family.
Fish.
Screen Fish, Steve.
Sure. Welcome to the podcast. We are so excited to be here to talk about Fate of the Furious, the latest entry into, of course, the Fast and the Furious franchise. And for this week, we are excited to have returnee Greg Bannick, who is now a Screenfish veteran, I suppose. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you, Steve. I win by a centimeter and a kilometer.
Yes, he does. And, and Julie Levac, our Screenfish newbie this week. Welcome, Julie.
I'm excited to be here, yet already confused 30 Good. Seconds in.
That's about it. Greg was going for the cool slam on that one, and he
I'm
got
have
it.
To brush up.
I don't know. I went all the way back to the beginning.
This week we are talking about Fate and the Furious, the eighth entry into the Fast and the Furious franchise, following the life of Dom Toretto and his quote-unquote family, including Letty and now The Rock, who's, I think his name is Hodges. Luke Hobbs. And just about every other action star. Now, it's almost becoming The Expendables, actually, at this point. It started off as a franchise about street racing, is now they're almost superheroes, but I'm sure we'll talk about that. Before we get into that film and the franchise, though, we just want to remind you at home that this podcast is open for spoilers. We will be talking about the film extensively, and that will mean sharing story items that you may not know. And yes, there was a script and a plot to Fate of the Furious. So for now, let's talk a little bit about the Fast and the Furious franchise. This franchise has literally done almost everything. Now, we talked about it before. They're basically superheroes. And there was even a joke made several years ago that eventually it will be Fast and the Furious in space. The funny thing is, after this episode, they have almost said, hey, if we got a plot that would open for that, we would do it. Which is unbelievable, as the franchise is fun, but they can do anything they want. So I thought, let's talk about where we think the franchise has to go in either 9 or 10, and maybe even, if they were rebooting the franchise, who are some actors you would like to see in it or in those roles now? Because it's been going on now since 2001. This is a 16-year-old franchise.
Well, Steve, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I have a really great idea that they can totally use for 9 and 10. So for 9, what ends up happening is Cypher has somehow developed a super car with superpowers, in which case Dom needs to go to Central City and recruit the Scarlet Speedster. So of course, it becomes The Flash and the Furious.
The Flash, whoa.
But at the end of that movie, what happens is Cypher's going so fast, she's about to hit a clock tower, but she gets struck by lightning. And so Dom, at the end, starts noticing he's fading away, and then suddenly his son comes from the future where everything goes back to the 80s, and he's in an AMC DeLorean where they have to go back in time to save Dom's father so that he can meet Dom's mom so that Dom can exist. That way there's three Toretto's, and of course that will be called Back to the Future.
Mic drop. Right. Whoa.
You know what's funny about that? You've essentially tied it in with every major franchise, sci-fi franchise. The thing is, it actually doesn't even sound that out of place for where they are.
No.
Okay. All right. Julie, what do you think?
Oh, honestly, I am so far below what just happened right
now. I'm not even sure what just happened here, but that's okay.
I'm more of a realist, and I couldn't think of anything super epic. I thought, yeah, the space situation was on the table, but I think the producer said that wasn't actually going to happen. So I thought maybe they could incorporate something about space, maybe have to thwart a plan where they're trying to send some rocket up to bomb the space station or satellites or something like that. But I was thinking more along the lines of the family aspect and how I think that Letty is probably going to raise the baby as her own with Dom and have their little family going on. And I think I really want to see Jordana Brewster come back, at least just to visit the baby. See right. baby Brian.
Sure.
And I know that they said that Jordana Brewster wasn't in 8 because, what is it, Mia and Brian sort of come as a package deal. If Brian's yeah. not going to be there, it doesn't make sense that Mia's going to be there.
Yeah, and in the franchise, they're just sort of gone right now.
Yeah, they're like, we're going to have a second baby. We don't need to be part of this life.
Exactly,
but
exactly.
But even as just for nostalgia purposes, bring her back. Maybe a quick montage, she visits baby Brian, and then they get on with it.
Yeah, I like that. One of the things I think actually could tie in, you were talking about sending a rocket or something. I think satellites are the next thing for them to go. They've already sort of done that, actually. I think it was God's Eye.
Yep. Yeah.
God's Eye was essentially sort of that. Mine, I admit, is a bit of a cop-out in some ways. I think that what they have to do is they have to, at this point, go Civil War. Dom's team versus Hobbs' team and split them up entirely. I didn't believe for a moment in this film that Dom had betrayed the family, and even the family didn't believe that Dom had betrayed them for the most part. You know, and I think there are some moments where they doubted, but they all kept saying, that's not our Dom.
Yeah, Letty had faith, Letty. I think. Yeah,
Letty really did. But I think inevitably where it has to go is just they have to split the team in half, pin them against each other.
That's fair.
I couldn't think of a bigger ask than where they've gone at this point, and it basically became a James Bond film.
Mm-hmm. And they had submarines. I mean, you can't get more epic than that.
Oh, it was epic. Oh for gosh. Sure.
It gets more and more amazingly ridiculous as you go on.
Yeah, I suppose I would say it's a lot of fun.
For sure.
It's a blast.
Blow Absolutely. Stuff up.
Yeah, that's what it is yeah. now, right?
Go way too fast, to blow stuff up, and somehow dive out of a car and be okay.
Totally
immortal. All the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I like. Didn't Dom redirect a missile on his own in this?
No, that was Hobbs.
Oh, Hobbs redirected a missile. Yes,
man.
Because that's what can happen.
He's holding on to a car door, though. So that was the logic of he's fine.
But I see where you're going, Steve, because they have inflicted mass destruction all over the globe. I mean, there has to be a repercussion. It can't just be, I'm going to run away from the law and seek asylum and everything's cool.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be repercussions, and perhaps they can touch on that.
I think you're right, and I think 4, 5, and 6 were sort of those things. It was like every time they're like, get arrested, break out, get arrested, mm-hmm. break out. Now they're just available. What do you think about actors to bring into the franchise, or if you were going to reboot it, who would you like to see in those roles? Vin Diesel.
Irreplaceable.
How do you replace Vin Diesel?
But we have been part of this family since 2001,
it's
and
true.
It's really, really hard to think of anyone else in those roles. But I was thinking about this, and man, was it hard. I was thinking more of like for Vin Diesel, Dominic Toretto, like a Charlie Hunnam, or even a Channing Tatum, even though Channing Tatum, I don't think, has that, like, gritty... I you know what I mean?
I could see Channing Tatum as Brian.
Ooh, I think you're right.
I think he could be...
He's more of the all-American sort of dude.
Yeah, that I could see.
But then I was thinking, because of the recent Moonlight phenom, think of Mahershala Ali as Dominic Toretto. Doesn't that intrigue you?
Surprisingly, yes.
Because it's that sort of boss figure. I don't know. He just, like, owns stuff in Moonlight. And I could totally see him being sort of a criminal, keeping his family together. I don't know. I just thought about that, and I was like, yes, I could see that. It would kind of take the movies in a different direction, I think.
Well, it actually could make it more dramatic. Yeah.
So awesome.
Yeah, I think that could be good.
But to keep the humor, I would replace Ludacris with Drake, because you still want a rapper turned actor.
That's fair. I really like Ludacris and Tyrese together.
Those
Their
were so
chemistry,
great.
so good. They're hilarious, and they do not disappoint in this movie.
They're not in the original, are they not?
No, I think they both came in two.
Tyrese came in two fast.
And as did Ludacris.
So did Ludacris. Ludacris did? I think it was close to the end.
Well, you know, it's funny you talk about him being, about Vin Diesel being irreplaceable. I think that's where the franchise blew itself up at the beginning, because Vin Diesel, or the rumors that you hear is that Vin Diesel wanted $20 million for the sequel, same as the sequel to Triple X. Ironically, the franchise has now become Triple X. Like, it's basically what he's doing. But so they said, well, we're not paying you, and we're going to start over, and they started with Brian. And the third one was in theaters, but it felt like it was direct-to-video.
It was terrible.
Tokyo Drift.
Tokyo Drift.
Yeah.
The only good scene is the last scene where he shows up again.
Well, and the interesting thing I heard about that rumor, and I'm not sure if this is true or not, but I heard that the way that they got him to show up in the final frame, part of the negotiation was that he got the rights back to the Riddick franchise.
That's what I heard, too. I heard that.
So as part of the Riddick franchise thrown in, he said, okay, I'll come in and say, and I think he says, I knew Han, he was a good man, or something like that. And we thought that was it. We thought it was over.
Yeah.
And yet, here we are. Who would have thought? Who could have thought?
It's like the modern day James Bond franchise. It's, well, that's hard to compare, but you know what I mean. But honestly, in terms of Tokyo Drift, and I gotta tell you, I love the first one. Number two and number three, it took me years to actually watch because I was like, forget it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't want to do it. But Han was like a good thing to come out of Tokyo Drift. Really good character. Loved him. Was sad when he died. Yeah.
But then they kept him on in the following films by saying, no, this happened before, right? Because Han.
That's right. Because he was in 4, 5, and 6.
Because he's in 4, 5, and 6. And they say that happens before.
Yes.
And every film they have to say, hey, man, I really want to get to Tokyo.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny. It's like this obligatory line. He's like, can I go to Tokyo? No, not yet. We got one last job. Yeah. It's like, but Tokyo. It's like, no, Han, don't go to Tokyo.
Why do you keep referring to Tokyo Drift? Just give it up already.
We know you want to go to Tokyo.
And then I can't even remember the main guy in Tokyo Drift that Han teaches. He shows up in 7.
He was like a bootleg Paul Walker.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
he shows up in 7 because now they're like, all right, Han's dead. So
the guy from Tokyo Drift showed up in 7.
Yeah, he's there.
He did show up in 7.
I totally forgot that. That's crazy.
He's not there for long, but he was there.
Yeah. Wow.
What is it about this franchise that they keep making more and more money? It's a serious question. What is it that keeps bringing them back and bringing us back? Because let's be honest. It's not the script. We know it's not the script. But for some reason, each film, $500 million worldwide opening weekend.
Mm-hmm.
The highest grossing opening weekend of all time was Fate of the Furious.
Insane.
I think it's a combination of things. One, it's stupid, mindless fun. And after coming out of a lot of really serious movies and you know, very dramatic things and everything else, as we get into spring, we want something more lighthearted and fun. And then the second thing is, I think they purposely put it out at a time where nothing else big is going to be around it. Beauty and the Beast, not there. Like, they intentionally wait to be like, is this going to be a relatively mild weekend? That'll be the weekend that will drop it.
There's an art form, I think, to when to release a movie.
Yes.
Honestly, it's insane. But I honestly think that it has a lot to do with the chemistry of the cast. Mm. I mean, if you see them in real life, if you follow them on social media, you see them in interviews, if they're doing group interviews, they are family. In real life, that's how they, and especially since Paul Walker's death, that brought them closer together. And the way they are in the films is sort of how they are in real life as well. And it's intriguing. It kind of pulls you in.
Yeah, I wouldn't go far to say there's been character development, but the characters have definitely changed.
Oh, for sure.
They certainly, you know, these are not Oscar-nominated scripts. They're just not. That's, we all know that, and going in, you know what to expect. To the point that the poster for the film now is a giant submarine with cars exploding. There's no people, no faces, barely any names.
Interesting.
And all it is just boom.
Mm-hmm.
Come and watch the boom. But you know, it's interesting you hit on that. I think now we can transition more on how we felt about this particular entry into the film franchise. The problem with this film, and I had fun. I wanted to come out of it in some way saying, man, because I didn't like 7. I found 7 to be disjointed, and that was understandable, which is why this one meant so much to for me to see whether or not I would enjoy it. Because Seven, they had to rewrite the script halfway through because Paul Walker died. We all know tragic that happened. But so the script felt all over the place, and I can't believe I'm using that in terms of a furious entry, but it didn't connect with me. But with this one, there was something glaringly wrong that I felt. And I think you hit it on the head when you say they really like being around each other.
Yep.
And it's this potential feud between The Rock and Vin Diesel. It is fascinating to me that they filmed the whole movie without sharing a single second of on-screen time together.
Oh, man.
The original Seven films were based around the bromance between Brian and Vin, or Brian and Dom. And that's why I think 2 and 3 don't work, because they tried to recreate it. Vin's not in it. And then third one, Brian's not even in it. Like, it's just all about the cars. And I think by the fourth one, they realized it's about the people, this group, and the chemistry they had. And I know people have made jokes about it. But if this tension, and this tension could be a publicity stunt to make you talking about it, could be. But if this tension is real, because they didn't go on press tour together, I think one of the things I heard was that when it premiered at South by Southwest, The Rock had been there to promote two of his upcoming films and left before the Furious guys came out for the film. So if it's real, they got to fix it. Because I think that, love it or hate it, those two are now the center of this franchise. And I think that to me was a major issue.
Well, I heard today that they have buried the hatchet, as it were, because they've already signed on for the next one. For sure, we've got Vin Diesel, The Rock, and Kurt Russell have already agreed to do 9.
But here's the thing. They can be in it and not be in it together. And that's what we saw in this film. I get the idea of separating Dom from the family, and that's that was about the only interesting plot twist they had left in so many ways, I think, in terms of the characters, because Dom is the center. But it's not the same.
Yeah.
It's not the same if they're not together. You can't be on the phone with the guy the entire time. There was something about being in a room together that is different. But I don't know. What did you think of the film?
I liked it. I mean, like you said, I had fun. We knew going into it, it was going to be epic and ridiculous. I mean, submarines and The Rock not only pinning men against the wall, but turning them sideways. I mean, he's just, you know, Superman, which he kind of is, but that's crazy. I really liked it. I really liked the cast, which also got more epic. I mean, we have both Shaw brothers, the Shaw matriarch, Charlize Theron. Am I pronouncing the name right?
I believe so. It doesn't matter. I'm in love with her anyway.
See, I know. We're going to have a chat about Charlize Theron, I think.
Yeah.
Because although I really, really liked her as the villain.
As Cypher.
Yeah.
I thought that she could have done more. She was like a super lazy villain. She sort of stood there and was like, okay, do this. Okay, do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, she was far from Furiosa, which how amazing would that have been?
Oh my
the Fast
goodness.
And Furiosa? Furiosa? There's your title. Boom.
Wow. How many days have you been thinking that one out?
Oh, I've been waiting
that's
for
11.
That ever since we realized we were going to announce
that's
this podcast.
Fast 11.
By then, it'll be just her. It'll just be called Fast Furiosa. That's all.
Yeah, no, I liked... this one had a different feel to it, but I feel like a lot of them have different feels. This one had a different director who I believe was F. Gary Gray. I really liked the Cuba sequence. Had a really nice feel to it. And I saw a lot of maturity. I think you were mentioning about the maturity, specifically in Letty in Cuba. I don't know. I saw her really grow up in this one.
Yeah, it's interesting to think that, I mean, these characters have been on screen for nearly 2 decades now at this point. And I do think they've changed. And I think Letty is a different character than in the first one, where she's just the rebellious 20-something, right? And yet she has still not lost... I don't feel like she has lost her strength.
No, absolutely not.
She hasn't just become the girlfriend, which I appreciate.
But what I really liked about this film then was it's a reversal of what happened when Letty left, right? Because Letty left, and what's Dom going to do? And now Letty's got to start to understand what it was like for Dom, because now the roles are reversed. Now Dom's the one that's on the outside, And she's kind of dealing with all of this. I mean, the situations are slightly different, of course, but even still, just the idea of them being apart and then coming back together and apart and coming back together. And you thought, you know, at the end of Seven, they're finally married. They're on their honeymoon. Now it's like, oh, no, now what's going to go wrong? Because it's just like Dom and Letty has been another relationship, though not necessarily as centralized as Dom and Brian. It was a big driving force. So, yeah.
Now, it's interesting, though. We talk about characters changing. So, with that in mind, I'd actually like to talk about Dom in this particular film. Talking about Fate of the Furious specifically now. He is a very different character than he was in the Fast and the Furious, I think was the original one, yep. Fast and the Furious. How has his character changed? What role does he serve, at least in this film or in the franchise at this point?
I think he's kind of the backbone of the whole franchise and of the family. Everyone turns to Dom for answers, and he always seems to know what to do. He's always got a plan. He is Fast and the Furious, I hate to say it.
I was a teenager when Fast and Furious came out, and so you look at the original Dom, and it's perfect for that rebellious teen, right? Like, oh, yeah. He's like, I've got my crew, I've got my friends, I've got my family, and I'm going to do whatever I want. And by this point, like, especially Cypher is challenging him, because she's kind of like, you know, you say you're all about family, but you're really this. You're not the Dom you were before. And it's like, well, yeah, it's been a whole bunch of years. He's going to grow up. He's going to start to want different things. And he's still him, but he's a more mature him, right? Like at the beginning, when he wins the race in Cuba and then gives the guy back his car, there's no way the old Dom would have done that, right? No. You know, it doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile, but that's, you know, winning is winning, and that's, you know, whatever happens, right? Because that was kind of a big linchpin of the end of the first one, was when his crew member lost the race. And so with that in mind, it's kind of interesting to see. It's like, he's growing up. He's not the same thing. He's still after respect and all of that, but it's not always going to be about, you know, showing off to look cool so much as supporting his family and keeping the spirit of going fast alive.
Yeah, it is funny, you know, when that first film, we talked about it, it was really about street racing, and now they always have to have one street racing scene in it to prove that it's still the same franchise, but it's always sort of at the beginning, and it's like, okay, get away from it.
I appreciate that they do that, though. It's a throwback. Yeah, I mean, it's not really cool these days to do that sort of thing. Mm. It was really cool back in 2001. Yeah, you're right. It was a really, like, awesome movie, and all the teens like us were like, oh yeah, let's hop in our dad's vans and like burn rubber. You know what I mean? I didn't do
you
that.
You made it sound so
yes,
cool.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Let's hop in dad's van and go burn rubber.
But that's, we thought we were Letty and Vin Diesel when we hopped in daddy's van. Again, didn't do that myself. But,
especially when drifting came along. Remember when drifting was like the coolest thing in the planet was drifting.
I didn't hit that cool scene, but yeah. No, but I kind of appreciate that they do the quick throwback, like the street race, the scantily clad women, the dance music, or in this case, the little Cuban vibe, you know what I mean? It's nice, because these movies are incredibly different now from what they were. So you have to tie it in a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting how different, not just the films are, talk about Dom. Dom's role in the film has gotten so much larger than even it was. Now, he was always the center, but really, let's be serious. The first one was a remake of Point Break, but with cars.
Yeah. Okay, but I think a lot of people thought it was Point Break, but the producer has said that, you know, that wasn't the intention. I mean, maybe they took some vibes from Point Break, and then I think that the producer said that they sort of got some stuff from Scarface, I think. Because of the family aspect.
Oh, okay. All right, that, yeah, I can see that.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but...
No, that sounds about right, yeah.
But at the core, they got the idea for the movie from an article that was just about street racing in New York, I think, and they were driving these Japanese cars. All from an article. Crazy, right?
Yeah.
And it's turned into this.
Yeah, well, they followed... I've I love the movie so much. I've actually listened to the, like, the producer's track, like, the voiceover as I've watched the original. And they said, like, they actually found street racers and followed them around under the purview, like, they wouldn't rat them out to the police.
Get out.
For the first one. And then...
Now they follow superheroes around with
and
the purview.
Well, and then this is the other thing, right? Like, especially for Dom and his team, like, to go from a tiny little town street racing against local cops or even maybe, you know, local cops who are a little over their heads to an international organization, you can't just always go back to the... To the little, like, how do you go back? Your world has suddenly blossomed to this big thing where you're friends with a special agent and, you know, you're going around and helping them all throughout the world.
Yeah.
It's hard to then go back to what it was before when you've seen, well, no, it can be so much bigger than this.
Well, and there and the audience has expanded exponentially. Like, yeah. It's unbelievable how much they've made. But, okay, and I'm going to literally probably choke on my gum for the next sentence that's going to come out of my mouth. So bear with me in mind. What is so fascinating to me is watching Dom take on this role. Oh, I don't want to say this because I don't like saying this. He's almost godlike, and I don't mean he's like God.
Okay, all right.
I don't mean, but it is so unbelievable to me. You guys hit it on the head when you said, like, after that race in Cuba, he says, you know, he gives the keys back. And then when he's sitting with Cypher... the actual speech, the actual comment, if I can pull it up here, give me a second. Literally, when he's talking to Cypher, Cypher says to him, "You know what I like about you, Dom? You're a genuine outlaw. I mean, you're a man who lives by his own rules." That's, which is surprising, because when I saw you in Cuba, I heard about a guy who almost killed you with a motorcycle, and you let him keep his car. And he says, "Of course, I could have taken his car. It's about something bigger. This way, I changed him." Think about that for a minute. That was one of those moments where I had to pause and just go, who is Dom now? Because he is at this place where he's actually seeking the betterment of mankind.
Like a little saint, yeah.
Like, this is what that was. That moment was, he says, "I'll take your respect." And he's showing him there's a better way to live than just an inch to a mile. And that's why I said it's laughable. I'm choking on my own gum. I'm not over-spiritualizing it. Except that his character has taken on a role that is no longer just the bad guy with a heart of gold. Now he seems like he's trying to make a difference. And it's almost bizarre.
But I think that he said that as a cover-up, because at the end of the day, he let that guy keep his car because now he's got another contact in his pocket that he can ask for help. At the end of the movie, the guy he let keep his car helped him out.
Yeah, but does he help him out because he's another contact, or does he help him out because his life has been changed? This is the thing, right?
Oh, that's an interesting point. Has his life been changed by Dom that drastically that he wants to help him out? Or is it like an eye for an eye thing, like, you help me out, I'll help you out? So it depends on how deep you want to take it.
It's the same thing with Jason Statham's character, whose name I can't remember.
Deckard Shaw. All the D words.
Yeah, right? Like, why is he so drastically different in this movie than he was in the last movie? We get that minor thing where Luke Hobbs pulls up again his record before, and, you know, he won a Victoria Cross, but it was just like, it almost makes it seem like, you know, this whole bad guy image he was in the last one wasn't really real, and all of this, and it's just like Dom's effect on people to get them to do things he needs done, and they'll do it, why? Because it's Dom. Yeah. Right? Because he had seconds to be like, "Hey, I'm going to pretend to shoot you, or I am going to shoot you, and you need to do this thing for me, because I spoke to your mom, okay?" And it's like, all right, and bam, bam, and then...
Her name was Martha. No,
Deckard Shaw, Jason Statham, is very interesting in this film. I think you were saying earlier that he is a murderer. And
He killed Han!
Which, and Han is, you know, a beloved character in the Fast franchise, but it's okay, because you're going to help us out this one time. But think about it. I mean, we almost grow to adore him.
Yeah.
I mean, the scene with the baby. No. I mean,
He's killing 20 guys.
You're killing all these guys, but you're holding a baby, and it's, you're just like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? But you adore him because it's so funny. It's so funny.
And I thought, I want to see him in Fast 9. You know, the Fine of the Furious. Where they all get traffic tickets and all that stuff for all the damage
they're
cost.
Oh, we're going back to, like, the basic stuff, like those DVDs.
That's right. But here was a guy who killed Han. You know, he killed him.
You loved Han.
I loved Han. He killed him. But you see, the, you know, going back to Dom, you know, talking about the effect he has, I think it comes back to this idea of the family. All of a sudden, Deckard is in the family. It's this expanding thing. This seems to be an all-powerful thing in the franchise, and not just because they beat you over the head of it. And I have heard, I believe, that the current tally is that the word has been said 40 times in the franchise is this word family over the 8 films.
And you know what? Only they were only said 35 times in this one.
So. That's right. So here's a question that is, this idea of family in a film like this, how do you think it, or what do you think family looks like in this franchise? What is it based around, and how, what does it look like?
I think we have to sort of take it back to the beginning, because Dom and Mia at the time really didn't seem to have any family. We know that their father was killed in a racing accident. I don't think that we have any mention of a mother figure, and that's it. Yeah. It's just Dom and Mia. And then at the time they had Letty, Vince, the other ones that I can't remember.
The ones that
aren't
here anymore. Yeah. Yeah. The ones that didn't survive to Fast 2, Fast 2 Furious.
And that was the family. You saw the little barbecues. They all come over to the house and they have a barbecue, and that's just, that's their Sunday dinner sort of thing. Mm. So I think that it means a lot to them, because perhaps they didn't have a proper family, and so they're making their own.
Like, I think for me, it's, they're all the people that can't fit anywhere else, and so this is finally a place where they could feel like, well, I can finally have a place where I belong, and all of these individuals, I don't know why, like, they were clearly me at one point. Like, every single one of them, you could be like, yeah, you were a loner, and you were a loner, and you were a loner. And, but now,
you were a street racer at one point? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, what I mean is, like, each one of the characters, right, were each kind of off on their own. Like, even, like, Luke Hobbs had a team, but he was still kind of very much by himself, and he's like, no, I'm just care for my daughter and all of this. And so suddenly, under Dom, you have a guy who can unite them and be like, we're all going to be loners together. And honestly, beyond that, I think it's the idea of shared experience, the idea of, you know, maybe I don't like you, but when things get rough, we're going to do everything we can to save each other. And so even to the point where, like, Deckard Shaw, right when Cypher and Dom attack, the very first thing he does is, you know, tackle What's-Her-Face to the ground to save her, and then he gets crushed. And automatically it's like, ooh, so Deckard's in now. Because now, look, he sacrificed for the team too. And so then the next big Hobbs and Deckard conversation ends with them laughing at each other. And it's just like, okay, yeah, because you now have that shared experience. Because it's like, do you remember that time where we almost died again and we didn't? And so I think, like, again, it's experience. It's the fact that they've always kind of been apart and can find a home here. Mm-hmm. I think that's what to them is defined by as family.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. And I think it goes back towards looking at Dom's role as well, because they have centered around Dom. Everybody knows this is Vin Diesel's franchise to quite literally run into the ground, although 10 is apparently the last one.
Yeah, I'll believe it.
For now.
I thought they were going to stop at 7, but anyway.
Well, he says he thinks in trilogies.
Oh, Lord.
That's what it is. So 7 was the start of a new trilogy, but they had to start fresh. So 8 is the start of 8, 9, and 10. But, you know, it's funny, going back to what I was talking about before. See, I look at it, and again, I'm sorry, I'm a pastor. It's almost like a picture of grace, too, because it's not just that we're not just shared experience. It's shared experience, and you can come and be a part of what we're doing.
Oh, a join chance us. Of redemption.
Almost a chance of redemption, which is why I was talking about that guy in Cuba, because it's so interesting that he says, I changed him. That's the first time I've ever heard Dom say anything that has an intentional purpose. Those things happen and his group gets bigger, and they have to end every film with a barbecue. I actually leaned over to a friend of mine where I was watching it with, and I said, they gotta have the barbecue next. And sure enough, zoom it in. There it is. It
wasn't the same without the house. And no. Then I was like, wait, why aren't they doing it at the house? And then I remembered, oh, it got blown up. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, can't go there.
Yeah, whoopsies.
But Brian was there in spirit.
Yeah.
Brian, too.
That was a little tearjerker.
I was like, are they gonna name the kid Paul or Brian? And I was like, oh, Brian, okay.
Yeah. There's somebody behind me. They went, called it. Great. One of the things I noticed this time, though, was with Paul Walker and losing what's his wife's name, the one that's Dom's sister, Mia. Losing Mia, you've now lost all biological connection to family. Mm-hmm. So what do? Is they bring in children. And they bring in the Shaw family. So now again, there's biology coming back in. That's so fair. It's not just these random people bringing together. But I think what we see is that the definition of family has changed in our culture. You know, when I was growing up, we talked about who our family was. It was who we lived with. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, with kids even in our own youth ministry, you hear them talk about who their family is, and it's this group of friends or this uncle and this sort of thing. And they've separated. The conversation is so much broader. And I think that this franchise like this just reflects it. I am not trying to put super psychology on the Furious franchise, but I think we see it.
Well, no, I agree with you because I'm also a pastor, but I'm not sorry about that.
I'm sorry, I'm a pastor. That's not what I said.
Sorry to bring it up.
No, but one thing I do actually see, and I agree with you, is like kids talking about families, like, oh, my home family, and then my church family, and then my school family, and my sports team. Well, we're like a family. And I was just like, you're only supposed to have one. Like, I'm not saying it can't include friends or other people that you're close to, but it's just, it's odd where I'm hearing the younger generation use family and talk about them as we would, like, groups of people we used to hang out with.
That's fair, but I think it sort of stems from people who don't have conventional families or, you know, don't have a lot of biological family in their lives. So, you know, you have to become close to somebody or some group of people. And sometimes you are that close to where you would consider them family.
And I think that we see now that this is probably one of the big reasons the franchise has gotten so big. It consists of two things. Boom, family.
Yeah.
The explosions, I mean, you get explosions from any movie.
But then you get the feels.
You get the feels.
Yeah.
get the feels. Get the single man tier on occasion.
The single
the
man
fires tier. And the feels is the real undercurrent.
Love it.
Fires and the
There's
feels.
There's the next title. the fires and the feels.
The feels of the furious. That's what we're...
And then the fires of the furious.
And the fires of the furious.
Wow,
is
you
the,
sound worse and worse as we go on. Wow.
Well... You know, I want to surprise you guys. Okay. I have here an actual transcript of the production meeting that went behind the name of this particular film. So let me just read the transcript. Producer, what number is this? Vin Diesel, 8. Producer, F8. Vin Diesel, hey, that sounds like Fate. Let's call it Fate of the Furious. And scene. And
is that for real?
No, I made that up.
Oh.
But there's no doubt in my mind that's what happened, because there is no reason to call this the Fate of the Furious.
Well, you know what? Before I found out that they had already signed on to do 9 and 10, I thought, okay, the Fate of the Furious. This is the last one.
Yeah.
This is where we figure out where it's going to end. And so I'm like, why call it the Fate of the Furious? That's sort of... what fate did we determine?
Yeah, that's the question. Is this film, this is one of those films that feels like it was trying to say something, but didn't know how to say it.
Wait,
I think.
So are we saying that Dom's not going to be furious anymore? Because, like, think
the
about
fate
it.
Of the feels? Is that the next one? Is the
I mean, fate of like, the fate. He gets, there is, like, at the same time, while he's very, like, he's offering redemption for the man in Cuba, at the same time, when after Cypher, you know, the birth mom is dead. I can't remember her name now.
Elena.
After Elena's dead, and she talks to him about it, and he says, kiss my son, because he is the only reason you and everyone on this plane are still alive.
Mm-hmm.
You're just like, yeah, he's still Dom in many ways.
Yeah.
There was a quote, because he said, do you want to see the old Dom? watch. And that's when he hangs up the necklace and he's going to sort of do his old school Dom thing. So he's in there somewhere.
Yeah. But that was also a sneaky little trick, as we find out, for him to hang up the necklace.
And I was talking to you guys earlier mentioning that I thought the necklace had a lot of symbolism, and I think it still does, but then you find out through all of it that it's a tracking device.
But you know what? Is that was something else, too, thinking about family and the idea. I want to come back to this idea of fate, but going back to family just for a moment, it's interesting to see the type of values that this family particularly has. Okay. Because one of them, I would even say, is spiritual, and I'm not trying to push it. I'm just saying it's there. They say grace.
Yes.
Before they eat.
Yes, they did. Right from the beginning they did that.
It is a rosary. It may be a tracking device, but it is a rosary. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the lines that I thought was really funny, I this was probably what started me on this whole line of thought, is when they're in Iceland and they say, "What are we going to do now?" And somebody says, "We start praying." And the next shot is Vin Diesel's car charging over the cliff. See, this is where I go in. The power that Vin Diesel has in this family is so interesting.
So in this universe, when you pray, Vin Diesel's got to show up.
Vin Diesel shows. Oh, man, it almost makes you not want to pray.
Any two of you and Vin Diesel are joined together.
Lord, help me on this exam. Yeah, okay, so I'm not saying it goes infinitely, but it is interesting juxtapositioning.
Sure. Absolutely.
So there is, the values of this family aren't just, hey, we kind of like each other. There is something that they are drawn to, some sort of character trait that unites them. It's so interesting. And there are this family is not a random collection. I mean, it is maybe a people, but they do have a culture. And I'm not talking about ethnicity, because that's been made of this franchise, too, is that it's really the ethnically diverse superheroes, if you will, which I think is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But there seems to be, like, this sense of tradition, family traditions. Eat together, you pray, you do these. It's very fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Definite down-home family values. I mean, you saw in the first one, like, Mia cooked the food, and she washed the dishes, and she made a comment about it, and not saying it's right, but they have those sort of old-school way of thinking in some ways.
Which is surprising to me in some ways when you look at a franchise like this. For no reason other than the fact that it just doesn't seem like something it should be central or important to them. But this is something they have in every film. This isn't a fluke. It always ends on these certain things. It's really interesting.
Maybe that's why people love it so much, because it goes way deeper than just some fun action, you know, blowing things up and cars racing. There's something more to it.
And you feel like you almost can be a part of them.
Absolutely.
Well, and no matter what culture you are, to be able to sit around at a meal together is something very, very special.
Absolutely.
And it's something that all cultures want to do. Like, the importance of everyone needs to sit down, stop whatever you're doing, and eat together. Mm. And that's something that, you know, they go all around the world and they do all this. What's the last thing they're going to do? They're going to go and eat together.
Hmm.
Yeah. I do want to come back briefly and talk about this title, because I do think that they obviously tried to insert fate into this conversation in some ways, trying to bring that in. And it did feel a little forced. But one of the actual way it comes in is from Cypher. When Cypher first meets Dom in Cuba, and she says, "Oh, this is a very different game that I can assure you. There's something much greater at work. This is fate." And Dom says, "I choose to make my own fate. Cypher, not today. Is this the road you take to your apartment every morning? What else is different, Dom? It took a lot of work to get you here today." Dom says, "I don't care what you want." But what do you guys think about this film's portrayal of fate? What do you think it actually seems to suggest?
You know, I gotta be honest with you, because when we were talking about this before, I was like, of course, family and freedom were the two main themes in my book. But then when you really look back on that first meeting between Dom and Cypher, wow, you know what I mean? And then you were mentioning that Dom is almost a bit of a god figure. In this conversation, it sounds like Cypher is that. She's like, it took a lot of work to get you here, and this is fate, and, you know, we're going to have this conversation sort of thing. It's very interesting how she asserts her power immediately.
She kind of sounds more like the devil than she does.
True.
I'm going to give you choice, but they're never really real choices, like, as Dom highlights. We know, but it was your choice. No, it really wasn't.
And that opens up a whole other conversation about choice theory and how she talks about choice theory.
Why don't you read that for us, Julie? Because, again, this is a concept that is far too philosophical for the Fast and the Furious franchise in so many ways.
Oh, like, my gosh. We could sit here for hours and discuss this. Because I just tried to Google this, and I was like, I am not educated enough to discuss this with you guys today.
That's okay. Neither are they. So that's... But what does Cypher say about it?
So this is the scene where Cypher is saying, well, I've let the guards go, and I know what you're thinking. You know, you could shoot me right here, right now, sort of thing. Mm. So she says, have you heard of choice theory, Dom? There's a bunch of axioms, but only two you need to concern yourself with. One, the only person's behavior we can control is our own. And two, the only thing we can truly give another person is information. So let me give you some. You see these cameras in here? The moment you make a move, highly armed guards will come into this room with one specific instruction, and it's not to save me, it's to kill your son. And that's a lot of bullets, and it only takes one for you to lose everything. And I have to ask you, because I know family is so important to you, is that really a choice you want to make? Because I'm ready if you are.
Yeah, his response is, since I'm alone, I got no choice.
Well, actually, no, because he says no, because even if I do manage to kill them all, he says, it's a double fail. Like, you need, he says something about a dual link. Like, both
two-man fail-safe.
It's a two-man fail-safe, and because I'm alone, I couldn't do it. Because the idea for Dom isn't even that he couldn't take them all out. It's just like, I could take everybody out, but I still can't open the door.
Yeah, how do I get to my son?
How do I get to my son?
Yeah, yeah.
Dom is one of those characters who almost seems like he's caught between old Dom and new Dom. But as every film goes by, it becomes more new Dom. I think this one tried to awaken old Dom, if you will, as I use air quotes. And one of the things Cypher says to him is that, you know, what's the most important thing to you? And he says, family. And she says, no, it's not. It's those 10 seconds between start and finish when you're free.
Yeah, she says something like, no family, no responsibilities. It's just you and your freedom.
Freedom and fate seem to go hand in hand in this film. And that's why I don't think it really seems to know where it wants to go, because it's using fate as sort of a freewheeling concept.
Freedom is one of those themes that you can see in the movies, but didn't quite blossom as much as family did.
Yeah.
Because in every movie from day one, you know, I'll die before I go back to jail. That's what he's saying. I'll die before I go back. And he's always running from the law. And then in the other movies, I think from 5 onward, they start off with, okay, he's left the country. He's trying to live a normal life with girlfriend of choice. And then he somehow gets pulled back into that old lifestyle. He even was sentenced to like 25 years in prison and was broken out of jail. Well, the bus.
Yeah.
But
which is a great scene. I'm not going to lie. That's a lot of fun. Yeah, fantastic. I love the bus.
But yeah, it's definitely one of those themes. And then even in this particular movie, he's physically free, but he is under the spell, so to speak, of Cypher. It's like he has no choice. He has to do what he has to do to save his son.
So is she saying then that by agreeing that fate is set, you're free because it's not your consequence? Because if fate is set, you're not really responsible. Therefore, you are, by definition, then free. Because it's like, well, I wouldn't do this. I'm being forced to do this. But by making a choice, she would say, well, no, you're not really free because you're making it harder on yourself. If you just accept that this is going to happen, how much easier would it be on you?
I think that sounds like a logical conclusion, if you can have one.
I mean, I'm breathing a lot into a very, very, you know, just silly, fun movie. But because, again, her whole thing was she's like, I want to keep the world accountable. And, you know, she wants to essentially be God, because she's like, if I can control the nukes, and the next time a world leader steps out of line and I'm willing to drop one, then everyone will be held accountable. And I think for her, that in some weird way, that's going to make the average person free, because then the people in control can't oppress others, even though she doesn't realize now she's become the world's oppressor.
Yeah, see, that was where I wasn't sure why she even wanted it.
But contrast her to Mr. Nobody, who tries to get Luke Hobbs out and goes, well, I'll label you a criminal, but you'll still work for me. And he's like, oh, it's just a label. right?
Yeah, in other words, right.
I'm the government stooge that does the things that, you know, the dirty things that the governments don't want to reveal that actually needs to get done, is essentially Cypher's role, sans a world power. She just wants to do that. And she's like, you know, to make everyone free, I will be the villain that will do horrible things like, you know, capture a baby and her mom, because I'm really going to be doing the greater good, I think was where she was trying to go.
I think you're probably right.
But also, like, consider the world stage as it is, right?
Yeah,
we've got
true.
A very volatile, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow in the world stage, and who's going to be upset, and what's happening here and here and here. It speaks to us at a time where we're like, we don't necessarily fully know what our governments are doing or whether or not they're going to be making the best decision for the people. Then this movie comes along, and though it's a tiny little part of the story, I think it resonates for a lot of us right now.
So many films right now were made a year and a half, 2 years ago, and they just feel like Trump films.
Yeah.
In so many ways, because of the moments where we are, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, you know.
Well, Cypher does have
world power.
Crazy hair. That does make me question why she would have hair like that.
Oh, wow. I kind of loved it. It was super random.
She's a beautiful woman. And don't ever say anything about Charlize. Yeah, no, I liked it, too. It was kind of different.
I don't know why. It was. It just fit. I think that if she had her normal hair, she wouldn't be as, like, kick-butt of a villain. I'm not sure
yeah.
why. Not that she was very kick-butt. Because she didn't
she sat
do anything,
by the desk.
But, yeah, but
she was
I
very
say,
intense, though.
Super intense, and I thought her monologues were fantastic. And to be honest with you, her monologues are, the meat of what we're talking about, right?
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. It's true.
Like, what she said was so deep and fantastic.
Well, I look forward to seeing her in the next one and her inevitable joining of the family.
Oh, you think that? Oh.
Because everybody that comes in always ends up in the family, so...
true.
What we'll find out is that there is a bigger power behind her in telling her what to do, and she'll join the family.
Aliens.
Oh, that's where we're going to...
There it is!
There's your space! There's your space.
There it is. There it is. The
invasion. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking to you all today. We've determined the fate of... The Furious, so to speak.
Next one is Invasion of the Furious, actually, is what it is.
Oh,
and they'll be
man.
Really bitter aliens. Anyway.
And then Amy Adams is going to come in and figure out how to communicate with them.
And then there'll be 2021.
The Arrival of the Furious.
2021, The Fast and the Furious Odyssey.
Yeah. Oh,
everybody just turned the podcast off right then.
Yeah, that's
that.
It. That's it. That was the end. That was it. I just hope the 10th one is called Faster and Furiouser. That's what I want it to be called.
Featuring Mr. Bean.
Oh, what a villain.
He's the villain.
He's the mastermind. If this franchise gets a fist fight between Jason Statham and Mr. Bean, I'm all in. I will go every day that it's in theaters. Let's transition a little bit here. It is interesting that it came out on the long weekend, and it did come out on Easter. Greg, you said you had some thoughts about that. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you have a really interesting question of how far would you go to save your son? And it's for the, you know, Christian church, it's a point where we of course, are celebrating the fact that God gave up his son to save all of mankind. And yet here we see Dom giving up everything else to save his son. And again, I'm let me be honest here, my wife is 8 months pregnant with our first child, and we know it's going to be a boy. And like both of us at parts of the movie, we're like, oh, this is hitting us way more than it would have otherwise, because it's like this like could be our, like, not that I'm
Wait.
At all.
Be very careful how you finish that sentence right now.
Let me retry that. But no, because I'm expecting a son, because it's Easter and all of this, like, we get this idea of we would do almost anything for our kids. And then for this movie to come out Good Friday and to kind of see, you know, Dom still wins, even though it looks like he would lose. And, you know, that's kind of really playing up in all of this. And, you know, people are coming back from the dead with Shaw and all this other stuff. And this kind of big redemption where everything ends well, relatively well, and Cypher loses, even though she's not gone, you essentially get the feeling of, well, but she's pretty beaten. And to tie that into the Easter message and this idea of good defeating evil, and it's like, yeah, there's still problems in the world, but good will inevitably win. If this movie had come out any other weekend, I don't think I wouldn't have gone that. But because it comes out that weekend, I'm like, I don't know, you know, a cross is there. You know, it's a big part of the thing. The last thing of the movie is saying grace. Like, it's a big thing.
And the cross is a marker for the child, too, yeah. Which is interesting. Honestly, one of the most powerful Easter films that I have seen was when I saw Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, because I saw it Good Friday. I was just going to see Batman and Superman punch the heck out of each other. That's what I went to see. And in Batman and Superman, where it ends, with Superman sacrificing his life and remaining dead at the end of the film, not just coming back. And I thought, my gosh, this is Good Friday. Because all his quote-unquote disciples gathering to be like, what do we do now? We feel so lost. So I understand. It's interesting how a season can frame our viewing. And I see when you say that. I didn't get that reading, but I certainly could see how you would get that based on the holiday.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because Dom didn't even know that he had a son. And he's just seen his son for the first time behind glass, not even able to touch him. So it definitely does raise the question, how far do you want to go for an unknown child? Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, you have no idea. It's interesting, though, because I really like Elena. Mm-hmm. Super cool character. She was her and Dom really did have a special relationship. So I thought it was sweet that, you know, they had the baby together. But, yeah, he went to lengths to save that baby.
And there were some lengths.
just a few lengths. I think it's interesting, though, going back to what I said earlier, he barely has any biological family. So this, I think, was super, super special for him.
That family has been restored in some ways.
Well, and you get the hint at the beginning of the movie that, you know, he and Letty maybe can't have kids. And what is that going to mean?
Because were you getting she's that? Just like,
because the idea of, you know, they're married and all of this, and you know, she says, you know, I could see that old man in you, and then he's like, well, are you pregnant? And she's like, no, I'm not. But she kind of then the next line is something along the lines of, you know, haven't you wondered why we're not? Because it's not like they only had sex the first time while they were on their honeymoon.
They've had sex.
Yeah,
I didn't get that.
Wait, whoa.
I know it's a PG film, but...
that's funny. Oh, I thought that's an interesting take on it. I mean,
I hadn't seen that, but that's interesting.
What I think about that particular scene, although it was a nice scene, it was sort of like I don't want to call it a spoiler, but it's like, oh, that was so obvious that they just talked about Dom becoming a father and then, oh, hey, he has a son.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's, no, you can see it's where true. It was going.
Yeah, goes back to the script maybe not being the strongest.
Well, you know, they haven't announced the Oscar nominations for 2018. Get out of here. So it could be there.
I will say, though, the acting has improved significantly because I rewatched the first movie, the acting is horrendous. I hate to say it, and I love the movie, yeah. But a lot of the people in there... Ouch.
Well, they've got a better cast, too. Like, let's be That's serious. True. They've actually got a much better cast. And Vin Diesel's had 8 cracks at this character. The truth is that Vin Diesel, you know, God bless you, Vin Diesel, is never going to make a significant franchise again.
Excuse me. He makes part of a second franchise, and he only says 3 words in that.
Yeah, we're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy.
I am Groot.
He's not even in the next one, is he?
Yeah, he is.
But there's a baby.
So maybe they altered his voice.
They've altered his voice. It's still him.
It's
still
is it? Okay, him. Okay.
I'm sure it'll still
be him. Yeah, it's still Vin Diesel. His name's on the poster.
On the last line, he says,
we are Groot.
But still, so, no, it's
But he's not there as Vin Diesel. It's just sort of, he's there as Groot. And Dom is his character. It's just part of the reason, I think, that brought him back to the franchise is on his shoulders in so many ways.
Yeah.
Well, let's transition out here, guys. I love talking with you, but let's do Screen It or Skip It. Fate of the Furious, Screen It or Skip It.
Screen It. It's a great movie. even if you haven't seen any of the other movies, this is just super entertaining. It's fun. Go have fun. Don't think, I mean, of course you can look at the
you can think
the deeper conversations we've just had.
The less you think, the more you'll enjoy it.
Let's be honest. I think you're right. But yeah, totally screen it. Go see it in the theaters. The big booms are always better on a big screen.
I completely agree. Totally go see it. It's just, you know, there will be so many movies that will be tearjerkers or pull your heartstrings in other ways, but this is silly fun, and we need those every now and again. And yeah, totally screen it.
I agree with you on the screen it. I think that if you don't like the franchise, this isn't going to win you over as a fan.
Okay,
so
yeah.
I'll say skip it in that sense. You already know what you're going to see. Even if you don't know the story. But it is so rare that I say that a movie is just stupid fun, and this one is just stupid fun. They literally take over. We haven't even talked about the fact that they take over every car in New York City at one point in the most ridiculous set piece I've ever seen.
Gosh.
It was unreal. Like, but all right, she hacked every car.
Highways of cars.
They were literally falling from the sky.
I was waiting for Optimus Prime to show up.
Oh man, there's the extended universe. There it is. Hasbro has a bigger stake in this movie than we thought.
Wait, that's number 9. Transformer.
Oh my goodness.
Amalgamation.
The Fast and the Formers. That's what it is.
Okay, all right. We're going to have to go home and do some homework on, like, proper names for 9 and 10. We'll get back to you guys on it later.
Guys, it's just been great having you on. Thank you so much. Julie, thanks for being on.
Thank you so much.
It's been great having you. Greg, thanks for coming back.
Thanks. I love being here.
It is great to have you both. And for all of you at home, we will be back in 2 weeks when we will be talking about The Circle, which is the latest sci-fi movie starring Tom Hanks, and I don't think that's ever a sentence that's ever been said before, and Emma Watson, and I think even John Boyega's in that movie. We're going to be talking about that in a couple of weeks. A reminder, you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and, of course, on screenfish.net. And if you go to screenfish.net and you go to the podcast page, you can also download Fishing for More, which is questions that you can have should you want to have a deep theological discussion after watching Fate of the Furious as well. So be sure to check that out.
But Tom Hanks was in Cloud Atlas. You could argue that's sci-fi.
That is true. Tom Hanks was in Cloud Atlas. I stand corrected. Greg, you're not coming back on. No, okay. Thank you guys. Love having you on. And for all of you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish. If something happens and, you know, somebody has to go to the bathroom or something, just say so. And we can always pick it up.
Bathroom!
Bathroom break! Don't be an idiot when you say it, all right? There's a bathroom buzzer.
Because then he'll keep it in.
Yeah, I know, right?
Greg has hit the bathroom buzzer, so...